It's 8:01. This is KBNF Regional News for Tuesday, March 24th. I'm Patricia Naft. Last week, a couple of elected officials and representatives from state organizations gathered in Paonia for a town hall-type meeting. Representative Millie Hamner, whose district covers part of Delta County, was there, as well as Senator Kerry Donovan, who represents Delta and Hinsdale County, among others. Joining them was Mike King, the executive director for the Colorado Department of Natural Resources. It was mostly an update about how the two congresswomen's terms were going, but things did get a little heated up when the issue of oil and gas drilling came up. King talked about the recommendations from the recently completed oil and gas task force.
So now industry will have to sit down with the local government, work through their issues. If they can't, they're required to go to mediation. All of those things would occur before the OGCC would hear anything in these particularly high areas of conflict. We think that's important, and I think that will resolve the vast, vast majority of the issues that we face. Well, I think you have a lot of conflicting and competing interests. You have mineral owners who have an absolute right to develop their mineral interest, just like any other property, right? And so how do we allow them to do that in a way that respects the community that they're in? I don't think you find that compromise by saying, no, you can't develop, just like you can't tell people that they can't utilize any property interest.
You can tune in tomorrow to hear about other issues that were discussed at the event. According to a recent report, the percentage of children in Colorado who live in poverty fell for the first time in several years. This is researcher Sarah Hughes, who works with the Colorado Children's Campaign.
After many, many years of seeing really discouraging increases in the number of kids that are living in struggling families, it was welcome news to see that the child poverty rate had declined, even though it was a small decline.
The number of children in poverty dropped 1%, down to 17% statewide. Unfortunately, it's a reduction in the average. Not every county in the state has seen this drop.
It was not seen statewide. We know that there are many communities that have been feeling the effects of the economic recovery for a while now, and then there are other communities around the state where they're still feeling like they're right in the middle of the recession. Primarily in Colorado's rural communities, we know that kids there are still more likely to be living in poverty than they were before the recession happened. We do something in Kids Count called the overall Colorado Child Well-Being Index, which ranks the 25 largest counties in Colorado on child well-being. So we look at things like the poverty rate in a community or the dropout rate, the percent of kids that are uninsured. And a lot of the counties on the western slope, including Delta and Montrose counties, tended to rank toward the bottom of that ranking this year in child well-being. So Delta County, for example, ranked 22nd out of the 25 largest counties in the state for child well-being. And we see kids in Delta County, Montrose County, on the western slope being more likely to live in poverty than the statewide average, and also more likely to be facing health issues as well. So the infant mortality rate, for example, is much higher in Delta County than at the state level, as well as the teen birth rate and the uninsured rate. So it does seem like kids on the western slope are, in many cases, certainly not all, but in many cases, dealing with some tougher issues than their peers around the state.
Hughes remains hopeful, though. She cites the discussion about health care as an example of bettering Colorado children. In the past few years, they've seen 70,000 more kids with health insurance. Hughes also says that the bill in the Colorado Congress that would expand a teen birth prevention program would be great news for Colorado kids. An academic paper published recently contradicts a commonly held belief about Colorado's forests. It found that forests where there's been a lot of pine beetle kill are not at a high chance for wildfire. KBNF's Jake Ryan talks with Sarah Hart, a researcher at the University of Colorado.
Forests that were infested by mountain pine beetle don't appear to have any increased risk of burning.
Now, that seems strange, because wouldn't a pine beetle kill create lots of deadwood fuel for a fire?
Yeah. So that has for a long time kind of been the assumption. And what we're kind of arguing is that while there are these changes that occur to pine trees as they are affected by mountain pine beetles, the changes that are, you know, occurring are altering fuels, but ultimately in most of these forested ecosystems, there already are a lot of fuels. And during the kind of warm and dry conditions that promote widespread fire across the West, we think that these changes just aren't that important. And that really what's important is that we're having these warm and dry conditions, which are drying out live trees enough for them to burn too.
So it's not that this forest has a gallon of gasoline, this forest has a gallon and a half of gasoline. It's these warm and dry conditions that are priming everything to burn?
Exactly.
So with this new understanding, where do we go from here?
Well, I think there's actually still a lot more questions to ask about how mountain pine beetle-affected forests might interact with wildfire. We're still unsure about whether mountain pine beetle-affected forests might burn more intensely and what kind of challenges they might provide for people who are trying to fight fires in that area.
That was KBNF's Jake Ryan talking with Sarah Hart, a researcher at the University of Colorado. And finally, this past weekend was the 15th annual Eckerd Crane Days event. Hundreds of people came to the Delta County community to see the sandhill crane migration. KBNF's Laura Pomisano was there and brings us this report.
It's a clear morning at Fruit Growers Reservoir in Eckerd. There are about 30 people here waiting to see a flock of greater sandhill cranes take flight.
We have it on 45 power so we can bring the cranes in close.
That's Susan Chandler Reed with the Black Canyon Audubon Society. She's showing people how to use a spotting scope so they can watch the birds as they forage in a field.
You can see them at a higher magnification than you can with just a binoculars.
The birds are tall and gray with a red cap of bear skin on their heads.
Pretty easy to see. They're such a big bird.
This is Cheryl Socorro's first time coming to Eckerd Crane Days.
You know, I mean, you can never see too many sandhill cranes or hear them. You know, they have a wonderful bird call.
There are a dozen or so cranes here this morning. That's a small number compared to the 1,500 that recently came through the area. The cranes stay in New Mexico for the winter and then fly through Delta County in March and April. When they start their spring migration, they stop in the San Luis Valley in Colorado for a few weeks before making their way north. The ones that visit Eckerd usually stay one night, then leave in the morning. Evelyn Horn lives near the reservoir where the cranes rest before continuing their journey. She's been watching the birds for the past 25 years.
And what do you love about these birds?
Their sound, I think, is the most amazing thing. They... trachea, or the windpipe, is 4 feet long, approximately. The bird is approximately 4 feet tall, so there's as much windpipe as there is height of the bird, and that's why they have such a strong voice that you can hear them for miles and miles.
Horn also runs a crane hotline that's active in March and April. A fellow birder gives her account of how many cranes landed at the reservoir that evening. Then she updates the voice message on her home phone with the current information.
They can call up and get a count for the birds. Now if I say 16 like I did last night, most people won't bother to show up. If I say 1,500, then a lot of people will show up.
For KVNF, I'm Laura Pomisano.
Stay tuned for Chase and Ashley with a Tuesday morning music mix. For KVNF News, I'm Patricia Naft. And thank you for your support.